Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Jules Gill.
Hello. There's one more twist I need to just...
Good Lord, go on.
Just realised there's a Christmas hat here.
Good. We'll leave this in the recording.
Yeah.
Good.
There we go. It's the festive spirit, my friends.
How satisfying does it feel to put a hat on when you're already bald? You haven't got to worry about your hair. You can just slot it on.
It's going to happen to you at one point.
I know, it's not a knock. I'm looking forward to it. Because you can just put any hat on.
I know, it's brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, that's what I was going for. Anyway, 2019 is coming to an end, and when Jules isn't being offended by his lack of hair, he's thinking about surprising titles of the year.
I just didn't see it coming, mate. I was just like, oh, here we go. Get to hang out with friends. Oh, no, getting ribbed.
Yes, enemies. But we thought we'd look at the most surprising games of the year because we've already done our best stuff, we've got the worst stuff, we've got the best of the decade. There's a ton of stuff going on. So we've sort of nominated 3 games that surprised us across the year, and we're just going to run them down. So, Jules, you can open with Blasphemous, which I don't think me and Rich played.
I've not played
it. It's kind of like a little present exchange, this, isn't it? It's like giving the gifts of games that you should play for the next year, which is quite nice. I mean, Blasphemous comes from the masterminds that are the British developers Team 17, and they are just wonderful people. We hung around their booth for an extended amount of time this year at EGX to check out their Overcooked 2 DLC and also Moving Out, their new game that's coming out. But I was there to talk to them about Blasphemous because what a game. I like me some Dark Souls. I like me some Metroidvania games. I like me some really gritty combat and lots of blood and viscera. So Blasphemous was everything I wanted it to be. For those of you not in the know, it is kind of like a 2D side-scrolling Dark Souls-em-up. And I know that a lot of people will say like, oh, everyone says that everything's Dark Souls. Now, this is very much in the realm of Dark Souls.
Kind of like Salt and Sanctuary.
Very much like that, because you are playing... you're playing this character who is looking to try and understand and free the world from its guilt and sin. It's based heavily in Catholicism and sort of the eternal guilt and suffering that is within us all, apparently. And it details... I mean, I don't feel guilt or anything like that. But the thing is that it's huge boss battles, incredibly tight controls and platforming, devilishly devious traps, and a combat system that is weighty but allows you the flexibility to upgrade all of your moves. So it kind of, your character doesn't level up as it does in, say, games like Dark Souls by hitting harder. It just means that they'll be able to do more, as in like do a dash jump or be able to like do like a sprint or something like that. So
in terms of like upgrades and stuff, like, yeah, because you said like, does it like change over time in terms of like fundamentally?
Yes.
That was one thing that I thought got in the way of something like Salt and Sanctuary.
This is where the Metroidvania aspect comes in, because of the fact that you will find areas that are locked off or items that are out of your reach that will upgrade your character in different ways or give you more currency to spend that you need to go and grind to get these new skills or unlock them to then come back to later on. And the world itself is brilliant because it does one thing so well that I feel that so many games get wrong, and that is checkpointing. Like, how many times have you played a game where it's either held your hand too much and it's been like after every step it's like autosave, checkpoint, checkpoint, because it's afraid of losing your interest, or you go like months and months, you've written letters to the front and had them come back and you've died in the meantime, sort of thing. It's very hard to do them right. But Blasphemous does a very good job by having you go into new areas and you will hit a sort of central hub area. That's where the bonfire-esque thing will be, or the shrine. you'll then go off on these little rooms and alleyways and tangents, but they will all lead back to that room. So that means that once you've completed that little branch of the level, you'll come back to the main thing. So therefore, you won't feel like you're losing progress by dying because you're actually just going out in like offshoots and then coming back round or finding new secrets to unlock shortcuts to make it even easier.
I always cherish a good checkpoint system. So my pet peeves in gaming is like kicking you back to before a cutscene or something.
I mean, that's why I was so bad at Dark Souls Remastered. It took me so long to realise there's a bonfire if you go off to the left and then dead. Literally, I was going from the first bonfire you get after you get dropped off by the big bird.
Yeah.
I was going all the way through trying to get the Taurus near me from there because I had no idea.
Thinking like, well, I've heard it's hard, but it's
I played it with Rach and she was like, oh yeah, just go in there. I was like, there's a bonfire there. Oh God,
it's not good. Rich, one of your first picks was Terrace 99.
Yes.
A game none of us saw coming, but it's brilliant.
Like, I played so much PUBG when it first got released into early access on Steam. Mm-hmm. Friends and I picked it up and we played it like solidly for about a year and a half, towards 2 years, like after 1.0 release. And we absolutely loved it. We got to go to PGI last year in Berlin, which was just amazing. But the only thing is I was burning out in Battle Royale big time. Mm. Like, I played a bit of Fortnite when that first came out and I didn't like it. I still stand by that I'm not really a fan of Fortnite as a Battle Royale game in terms of the way they mechanically added in all the building and stuff. I don't like that idea of building your own cover. I'd rather use the world, the environment that they've given, that the developers have given you. Mm. I played a bit of Apex Legends. It's very good. But again, I was still kind of burned out in Battle Royale. And then Nintendo turned around and said, hey, do you want Tetris? But with 99 players in Battle Royale.
Work.
And
it's
weird. Because people don't understand that there's actually a whole battle mode in Tetris. There has been since the original Game Boy version, and people don't know that it's a thing. And I stand by that it's genuinely a fantastic couch co-op time is playing Tetris battle games. Mm-hmm. And when they said, hey, we're just going to take the mechanics of this, which I already knew, and put it in Battle Royale, and it's like, why does this work so well? And after playing so many different Battle Royale games, it is genuinely the best one.
I love that you can see like your field in the middle, 98 other people playing alongside.
Wait, so you can see all of them?
Yes, everything is live.
How does that not become overwhelming?
It's not that distracting. You can't actually see very clearly what other people are doing. You can basically see a rough idea of, you can see the garbage lines they have. You can see how high up in the grid they are. But that's about it. You can see lines being sent between players.
So you can actually affect other players as well
That's the point. So when you clear, it's either double lines or more, or you can send combos of single lines. You will send out what are known as garbage lines to other players. These are lines that can be removed as well. They are always spawned with a single block missing, so you can clear them, which can also add to your garbage output, and that's how you manage to clog people up and that they lose. And that's how Battle Royale works in Tetris. It's literally just... Because, I mean, back in the Tetris Friends days, may it rest in peace, it's been closed down, they had a six-player battle mode, which was kind of like the grounding of this bigger multiplayer offering. And then suddenly they went, hey, let's do it as Battle Royale. And it to quote... The king, the kind of king, Todd Howard, it just works.
That's mad, though.
It just works. It's genuinely brilliant.
How long do the matches go on for?
Usually they're about, I want to say they're about like 8, 9, 10 minutes.
Oh, that's
maybe.
Cool. So they're quick turnaround.
But the difference with comparing it to any other Battle Royale game, because it always involves shooting, you are always on your toes. You are literally playing fast-paced Tetris the whole time.
It gives you like four potential things to do on the D-pad. It's like either you can attack someone who's about to die anyway, their screen's about to fill, then you get like
you can attack people who are about to fill their grid, which is obviously easy to get early. Like that's what I would always do to begin with, to try and get badges in. Badges will output your garbage lines greater, so you can get up to four badges. And if you have four badges, you can get a Tetris and you'll send out 12 lines rather than just four. You can so you can target people who are nearly filled at the grid, people who've got loads of badges, people who are attacking you, or randoms. And you can specify a target as well. You can move the little reticle over a particular grid, which doesn't really work in practice because you need to be focused on your grid. But
so if there's somebody you know is playing and your friends list and you just want to absolutely bash them, you just go like bang,
bang,
bang.
If you
manage
to work out who that person is somehow, it's probably next to impossible to do that. But it is a potential thing you can do.
And
it's genuinely like the people, like it is a weird concept. Like I remember watching the direct at home that night and literally it was like, it's out tonight. And I was there on my sat in bed refreshing the store waiting for it to come on.
You were definitely making that hand motion, mate.
It's worth mentioning that it is free if you already have a Nintendo Switch online.
You need an online subscription.
That's cool.
It's so good. It's kind of a shame it's been published by Nintendo. I wanted it to be published by the Tetris company so it can be released on other platforms as well, because it'd be so good. But it's just a massive surprise, like February, I think. And they just went, yeah, here you go, have this.
Have a fully formed thing.
It's like, how?
Yeah, and
they've
not.
If you've not played
it,
it's weird. If you've played it, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It's weird, isn't it? Because there's like, there's a few games that have recently done like sort of air quotes shadow drop sort of things, but they have not worked well. This seems to
Apex and Battle Royale. Apex and Tetris 99, I think, are the two biggest like surprise games that literally like day one, oh, here's a game.
The one that always sticks in my mind is the one that was like not an abject failure, but it was a failure, was The Quiet Man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it had a very quiet launch, and then it had a quiet disappearance.
It very much was The Quiet Man. My pick is Catherine Full Body for my first one,
nice.
Which is re-release of the 2011 game, but they added like a whole character and storyline to it and kind of bulked everything out. But that whole game, it's by Atlus, like the Persona people. The thing that I love is just, it's about that like mid-20s period of our like collective lives where you sort of leave the education bubble and you don't really know like how much you're supposed to settle down and how much you want to give up like the single life and whether you should be committed to a certain partner. And then, oh my God, someone else is pregnant and where does that leave me and whatever else, and they just die.
I mean, I didn't have that last one, but that's okay.
No, I mean, but still they go like headlong into that stuff and just give you like so many different choices that you can make alongside this like puzzle aspect of the game, because the main chunk of gameplay alongside all the different conversations and the dialogue choices is this like block sliding sort of mini game thing,
right?
Go on.
Just to interrupt, Atlus seems to be run by a corporate board of very, very sensible people, and then they've got one person who is on that board who is just, for lack of a better word, mad
just
as a hatter.
Slapping a fish against the wall.
It's the jewels of the company.
It's basically, go around, just kind of like, okay, so describe this game for us. Describe Persona. Right, I want to have high school drama. Fine. I want to have like love and like blossoming romances. Fine. Gets to the end of it, and it's just kind of like, and also you fight crime by ripping off face masks and having this giant thing. And in the case of Catherine, it's just kind of like, and you're a block puzzler as well. I'm sorry, what?
And all the men are weird little goats, and it's because they're all... The thing is that the thing that it nails is that sort of like slobbering archetypal approach to like male sexual fantasy stuff. When you're growing up and you're completely just like owned by your own teenage thoughts and just being like, oh, women! Like, this is that, the game. It's phenomenal.
The best thing about it is the fact that Vincent is not a good person. Like,
well,
because even if you try to, he still fumbles through
he's a buffoon, an idiot.
Like, and I feel like that's a good example of a fairly well-written character, because just because he's not likable doesn't mean he's not well-written.
I still think he's likable. You do
grow to like him depending on your choices, because you make his experiences your own. Yeah. But like, if you boil down what he does to people, how he treats people and where he's going, it's the Scott Pilgrim syndrome, where basically... starts off as a douchebag, but you can redeem them if you are a better behaved person.
Yeah, I would challenge the douchebag thing in terms of I'd find him likable, but I think that the way that they play him is to be a moron. They put him in a situation that is terrible.
Being likable and being a douchebag are two separate things, because like Scott Pilgrim is a good example again because of the fact that he is a douchebag, but you root for him in a way because of the fact that he's a likable, funny person.
With this, like, you have the whole thing where Vincent is dating Catherine with a K, and then she leaves him. She like reveals that she's pregnant, and then she leaves the diner one night, and then the next thing he wakes up and wrecks to this girl called Catherine with a C, and he's just like, what the hell, and he can't remember anything that he's done, and you just play from there. And like I said the main gameplay is this puzzle based thing, which is representative of him getting his thoughts in order, is what it's supposed to be, but you also make a ton of dialogue choices alongside that in regards to his approach to relationships and commitment and where he's at and what he wants to do, and there's like 12 different endings based on where you go,
plus the bosses, they all represent his like deep seated fears.
You fight like a big demon baby because he's like, oh my god, this thing's coming for me and it's going to take away my like individuality, my independence.
Doesn't it have a chainsaw in its mouth?
Time you fight it, I think.
It's just mad.
But that game is just, it's so recommendable. It's so well thought out. It's just, like I said, it dives headlong into that just hormonal nightmare that is your sort of early 20s and like late 20s. For sheer fun and bants, I have I've typed out some of the questions that the game asks you, because every night when Vincent goes to sleep, that's when you do the get your thoughts in order stuff.
Yes.
And then he ends up at the end of like this sort of area where he gets asked one question. It's always a 50-50 split, and your answers to this stuff then get compared with every other player around the world, so you get to see what the world thinks of commitment and marriage and babies and everything else, which is brilliant.
Whenever you do those things in games and it comes up where you are in the mass minority, I always just think like, oh god, what have I done? I've made a huge error somewhere.
That's the thing,
though,
like finding out like sort of what the world thinks of like certain topics that this thing goes into, I think is a great window into like, because that's the collective space that he goes to at nighttime is this space where all these other like useless men turn up and they're all just viewed as like sheep and they're all trying to find out where they sit kind of thing. So I'm gonna ask you guys some of these questions and you have to pick one or the other.
Oh god.
I think I've got 7 of them. So your lover is cheating on you. Do you break up with them or make them end it? Can you pick one or the other?
You got to break up with them.
If
you find out, definitely.
Yeah, so I think that's what I went with at the time as well.
So I felt that was like a trick question then. I was so prepared for it to be weird. I was like,
They're only one or the other. It frames it as like a blue choice or a red choice, but I guess the red one tends to be more evil in the end. I remember when I was playing through it, talking to Ben Roy, he was just like the biggest sort of like Jack the Lad sleeping around, like going for whatever, trying to date both Catherines and then the other new characters.
Why does that not surprise me?
Whereas I was like trying to settle down and be like, let's make this work. You're totally pregnant. I'm going to make this work. Like, you know, Mr. Marriage over here. Yeah. And then we ended up getting the same ending. And I was like, what? How did this happen? But not to worry. Next one. Is it easier to love or be loved? To love or to be loved?
Speaking from personal experience, it's very easy to love, I would say. To be loved is hard because you have to accept yourself and accept what other people see in you is worthwhile. Uh-huh. And that takes a lot of effort.
I think it's easier to outwardly love than to be loved. Because I tend to give more than I take.
And then it ends up being very easy to be hurt as well.
I know. Welcome to the What Culture Sorrow Cast.
Rich Seven.
To love, yeah.
Yeah.
To love. I can't put any kind of like eloquence on it. Like, yes, I just love people. It's fine.
That's fine. Does life begin or end at marriage? It begins or it ends.
I wouldn't answer either of those. That is the most bollocks
question.
The thing
is, as someone who is married, it's neither of them. Because why are you waiting to get married for your life to begin? Nor does it end because it's just a continuation.
I would say that if you're going to be technical about it, you could say that your love... life technically does end when you're married because your life together begins.
Yeah, which if you're doing it right is an extension of your life anyway.
Yeah.
I think because of like the looking at like tropes of marriage on like screen, you hear that question. I heard the idea of like, oh, you know, you're married now, you're tied down forever, your life's over.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like a time like you say,
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I have no idea what my answer to that question.
Well,
would
I think I would have said neither if I had the option to say neither.
That's the thing. Like we all say neither. You have to pick one if you're in the game. I think I went with it begins in the game because the way that they frame Vincent is very much like, oh my god, commitment, and I didn't want him to be that guy.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So whatever. What is more like paradise? A beautiful countryside or somewhere I can get a drink?
Countryside.
Yeah, that's good.
Definitely countryside.
Countryside's good.
I mean, like, imagine. Right. Okay. So set the scene. Staring
at a drink in the countryside.
Staring at a brick wall with a nice craft ale is fine, I guess. But I would rather be standing on top of like a mountain, looking down at an amazing valley.
But it's so endemic of that change you have when you go through your 20s, where you're like, you have the whole like party club thing. But then it's great, but then you would settle down after that.
But I know, for example, if I was, because I'm 32, so if I was 10 years younger, I probably would have just been like, yeah, mate. Drinks, the lads, isn't it? Because it would be like, if you're there with a mate, you're having a great time.
That difference between where you are at the start of your 20s and the start of your 30s or your late 20s is totally what this game's about.
Nowadays,
this game's literally just about me.
It's about all of us.
It's
great. Are all men stupid? That's right. Or not all men?
All men are stupid.
I think I went with not all men.
Yeah, I just said not all men.
Yeah. No, I think that all men are, because all people are inherently stupid, because without that you have no understanding of a concept of comedy, and you have to have tragedy and silliness to be comedic.
Philosophizing?
I'm sorry if I give a well-balanced answer.
Is it okay to lie if you'll never be caught? No problem
Jesus.
There. Or I still can't lie. I went with I still can't lie, because I made a
what
promise.
What was the first one again?
No problem there. I'll just lie, whatever. It doesn't matter.
No, because they're too extreme, isn't it?
I know.
Everyone has white lies in their life.
Nope. I try to be honest as much as possible.
Okay, I'd say that in empirically, no. Obviously, you shouldn't lie.
Yes.
But we all have lied at some point in our lives.
There is no middle ground. There is only the binaries.
If it specifies, like, you'll literally never be found out for it.
Yes, yeah. It's okay to lie if you'll never be caught.
The lie is the truth if it's never found out.
that's been a gene lyric.
That's that 1984 mentality, double truths coming in here.
Rich, are you going with it's okay to lie if it never be found out?
I guess. Yeah.
I love the fact that you're saying it with such a pained expression.
You have to live with the lie.
It's because it's like you don't. There is no middle ground to that.
Yeah.
In the reality of life, there is always that middle ground.
I don't like.
Hence why it's like marriage is like neither. Like, yeah. Kind of still saying neither to that as well.
And the last one is more of a banter one. Could you ever be paid enough to go nude in public? Never. Or how much are we talking about?
Never.
How much are we talking about?
Never.
No. Seriously, if somebody's willing to pay. Like, this is the same mentality that Carl Pilkington approached it with on Idiot Abroad, which is a very funny TV show, when he said, would you rather be a pauper looking at a castle or the king looking at a slum? And he said that he'd rather be a poor person looking at a castle because he gets to look at it. And it's nice. The king has to look at his crappy home. So the view from his place is actually bad.
We'll just look towards the mountains and enjoy the castle.
But still, I'm just saying that in that case, I'm not the one that's got to look at the body. It's everyone else. So I'm actually all right. I have to look at this every single day. I can't change it.
Assumedly a few million for how much you'd have to agree to.
Exactly. A few million, not a few hundred. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you need more. It's 50 quid. Yeah. Just whatever.
Oh, 50 quid.
I think... Yeah, I think you've only got to do it, like, the amount that the entertainment rolls through any given topic within a two-week window means that it will be completely forgotten about in immediately. But I still wouldn't want to run through a place naked. So
Fair enough.
No.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so that was all some Catherine stuff. Jules, your second pick was Control, which is a hell of a game.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Right, now, Control
We can
is,
rock it through the rest of these. We have 20 minutes remaining.
Honestly, though, the way that this game just dropped on my lap, literally by Ben Roy saying, do you want to borrow this? It basically was like, it's a brilliant third-person, psychokinetic, weird...
It's like PsyOps.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense in terms of the story, but does make sense as well. And I was like, okay, this is like selling it to me. This is really good. Went home and played it, and I was just absolutely blown away by how well made this game is. I know that there are a lot of people out there that are like, oh, it's rough around the edges in some places. It's a AA game made by a fairly independent publishing house. Yeah. So for what they have made, for it to stand alongside AAA games with such confidence, and with your first game in a series as well, I was just like, yeah, this is brilliant.
Well, like Max Payne, Alan Wake, Quantum Break, this.
Yeah.
But like still, like Remedy, like they take their time and they always infuse like so much love, passion, and research into everything that they do. And like, I love the idea that this is essentially Men in Black, the game.
Yeah.
Like you turn up to this place and it's, you have
it
no
doesn't
idea what's
exist.
Going on.
No yeah. one knows about it.
Yeah, something. Yeah. And all the records inside there are like, oh, this like supernatural thing happened like years ago. And then you slowly unravel what that building is for and what they do. And the fact that James McCaffrey, Max Payne himself, is the voice of the director,
yeah.
like on the other end of the phone that you talk to throughout the game. Control plays phenomenally well. The sales have been terrible for it, so I'm hoping that like by mentioning it, I mean, it's mentioned in the Game Awards lineup as well. And it's, well, the rumors are back and forth as to whether it's coming to Game Pass, but people should check this out.
It's interesting that a lot of people seem to find that the gameplay is the thing that they love and champion about this game, but the narrative has been the thing that's been the most divisive. And I can understand why. It's because it's not told in a formulaic way. It doesn't mean that you're stupid if you don't get it, by the way. And no. It doesn't mean that you're incredibly clever if you do. It is delivered in a way that isn't appealing.
Yes, it's quite messy. For me, it doesn't have an ending. It just stops.
Yes.
And I think that's because they're holding it back for the DLC. There's like 3 DLC packs coming.
But the thing is if you boil down everything to what it is a simple concept. It's just delivered in a way that is potentially a bit pretentious. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it or say that you don't like it because of those factors.
No, like even if you just run through raw gameplay, the telekinetic powers, the physics
they're
powers.
So fun.
Ripping chunks of concrete out the floor to smack into a dude's face.
And the way that they've done the physics engine as well, when you're literally just like honking bits of like concrete, having it like it's properly ripped out of the scenery. I'm like, that's really impressive. Yeah, they've done a great job with
it's gorgeous. Rich, your second thing was Remnant from the Ashes.
Yes, obviously I've already sort of put across my relationship with the Souls series. It's something I'm getting my head around a bit more so. Mm-hmm. Dark Souls 1, or Dark Souls Remastered more specifically, like I'm starting to get my head around a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But the Souls-like stuff is something that's more taking my fancy, especially this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Remnant was one of those things. It literally landed in my lap. A game that people have been talking about, and it's basically, you know, the way you boil it down is it's Dark Souls with guns. I've already talked about it a couple of times on pods before.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, because I love me some shooters, and I really respect the Souls formula and what it is and the challenge it brings. And this is the perfect blend of the two, and it's something that I just found myself completely lost in for a solid week. And it literally is the same sort of checkpointing system as Dark Souls, except it has a more randomized layout for the worlds you're in, because they're all like built from chunks and they randomly generate every time you.
So the whole thing is procedural generated, is it?
Kind of, yeah.
That's
more,
cool.
They're more like
within chunks.
It's more like a snap map style.
It's like a Dark Souls like board game, actually.
Similar to that. Like just chunks of it being laid out. And you know, it's got the narrative's pretty rubbish, to be honest. It's a really interesting like concept, and the world is fantastic. The actual narrative is a bit rubbish, and like when you finish it, and it's like, oh, cool, that's sure, that's that. But the gameplay is absolutely phenomenal, and they've added loads of stuff in to keep going back to it. So more of the gameplay is the main focus, and they've just said, yeah, here you go. Let's just like you can reroll particular worlds and just go for a jaunt and kill stuff.
Have you played more of this than some of the Souls or Sekiro type stuff? Like, what was it about this that made you like focus on this more than?
I think it's. I don't necessarily think it's down to purely the gunplay, though. The gunplay is spectacular. Mm. Just something about it really clicked with me. Like when I did go back to play Dark Souls Remastered again, and I did put more time into it. I was like, cool, this is good, but this was a game that literally just completely drained me.
Mm.
Like, I was sinking like 8-9 hour stints into the game over a weekend just with a friend, because you can play up to 3 players in co-op, and we would just sit and play. We basically played through the whole game together in an evening, and it was just amazing. And I keep needing to go back to it, because there's obviously, like I said, they've added stuff in where you can just re-roll, because there's like 5 or 6 different worlds to be in. You can either be in the actual world, like it's like an island that's been torn down by the root, and then there's like different like worlds to go to with different enemies and so on, different bosses, and you can just re-roll it and play through it again. And it's just, I don't know, it's literally Dark Souls with guns.
Mm-hmm.
And
it seems extremely focused.
I keep saying to people, it's so worth playing. It's on Game Pass. I think it's only on Xbox. It's on Game Pass. It's not on Game Pass on PC, but you can get it on Steam.
What's really strange is the fact that they've, like, that whole concept of Dark Souls with guns seems like it would be, like, the first thing that somebody would come up with as, like, a clone for it to try and expand the narrative.
It's taken this long to do it.
Because I know that there was it Let It Die? Was a kind of, like...
We're still melee-focused.
We're still melee-focused, but it had some sort of, like, bit more range.
I mean,
Surge
has fire on.
Code Vein has a little bit of more range.
It has a mix of range. Because Code Vein is another thing I've been playing this year that I have enjoyed. I've not put as much time into it yet. I am going to go back to it. But no, Remnant's fantastic. It's made by the people who did did Darksiders.
It's Gunfire Games, who like
is
I
it,
adore.
Is it Darksiders?
Yeah, they did their remaster. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they went through the Vigil, then they became Gunfire and whatever. Yeah, but they're okay. A really solid studio.
And they've produced this, and it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like you still get your whole loot grind, you get to level up your weapons and so on and so forth. There is a bit of melee involved as well. You just have your main like two-hand rifle, a single pistol, and then your melee, and it's just going in like that. But you've still got all the big flamboyant boss fights that you would expect from a Souls series, except like you're literally fighting Shrek at one point.
What?
It's quite literally like when you arrive at this area, it's like, oh my god, it's literally Shrek's house.
Is it just like get out of my swamp?
And it's a troll with massive tits, like with a big hammer swinging around like it's a bloody shot putter, and it's like this is ridiculous, and I absolutely love it.
Man, I've got it downloaded for Game Pass.
You need to try it. It's something. It's honest because like, some people it won't click with, because again, it is a Souls-like, but it's a new kind of Souls-like, and it's something I just clicked with so well.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
And yeah, awesome. Just absolutely fantastic.
Speaking of absolutely fantastic, Call of Duty Mobile is my second one, which I didn't think would be...
That's strange.
...would even work, but I mean, think it's phenomenal.
It is.
I just could consider the fact that they could... Oh, Jesus.
Oh, he's dying.
My throat's betraying me for recommending Call of Duty. But yeah, COD Mobile, they could have messed it up so much. Mm-hmm. It could have been the most microtransaction-riddled mess that barely gave you anything. It asked you to pay like a monthly fee, Mario Kart Tour style, to even unlock like the sort of stuff that you'd want to play with. But it's not that. It's the most... It's just so robust. It kind of plays like a greatest hits of Call of Duty, just compounded into one thing. Mm-hmm. The Zombies mode is obviously naff. Like,
Zombies mode's bad.
Yeah, but they included the Battle Royale in here, the Blackout mode, if you want to play that, but for me it's just like TDM and domination as always. Mm-hmm. It plays butter smooth, like 60 fps. It actually has a control scheme that I think works extremely well, and it does that standard Tencent thing that they did with the mobile version of PUBG, where they put you in with a bunch of AI players at the very beginning so you can learn the ropes and get used to stuff,
and then they'll just
and they slowly filter out, so you're playing with more players over time, and eventually you can totally tell when you're against AI at the beginning
because you get your ass handed to you.
Yes. Well, sometimes either they'll like laser shot you from across the map, or sometimes they just stand there like waiting for you to take a shot, and it's like, okay, either that's a bad player or that's an AI, but it lets you get used to the ropes. And you know, you can do everything in this that you can do in a standard COD.
That's cool.
In terms of like knee slides and the general sort of weapon layouts and the upgrade systems, and just it's Call of Duty Mobile. It's the thing that you wouldn't think they would get right, but because it was handled mostly by Tencent, and like a different studio as opposed to Activision digging their claws in and monetizing everything, I think it's a robust free Call of Duty on phones, which I just didn't see coming at all. And I've pretty much played it nearly every day. Like, I just love a good few matches.
Fair play. I mean, that's the biggest testament of it all. It's like, if you can say that you have played it every single day, then it's clearly got to be doing something right.
It's just, and it's just like, I dovetailed off it a bit when Modern Warfare came out, but it's just like, it is exactly what it says on the tin. And it's just, I know that that's a basic thing, but to get Call of Duty working to this level, with the amount of different maps that they've put in it as well, from all the, like I said, the greatest hits of Call of Duty from the last decade or so, it's just, it's exactly what it needed to be. It's
to be honest, perfect. We need games like this to absolutely champion the concept of mobile gaming being a legitimate platform, because unfortunately it is the bloody Wild West at the moment. God, still, like, you go there and the amount of just horrible mobile games that go out there, like, it's unbelievable.
I mean, like, I think because I don't know whether Tencent did Fortnite Mobile as well, they done, but obviously they did PUBG, and like PUBG, Fortnite and COD have done exceptionally well on mobile. They're showing that mobile can be a platform to be taken seriously. Even like Activision have genuinely looked at mobile before, because I mean there was Call of Duty Strike Team, which was of like the those weird top down slash first person missions from Black Ops 2 being turned into a game. They had the Black Ops Zombies and World at War Zombies back on mobile, which I played to death on my iPod Touch back in the day. But yeah, COD Mobile is fantastic. I've not played it as much as you, but as much as, there is still all of that microtransaction stuff. When you launch the game, you get about 15 closable ads to say, hey, do you want some boxes? But when you get past all of that, it still plays. You don't feel like you're being left in the dark if you're not churning money into
Thankfully, they do have that thing. Every time you boot it up, it's like literally four different pop-ups. They're like, no, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. But it's like tap, 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 and then you can just crack on.
Fair enough.
Otherwise, it's fantastic. And it is a shame that the zombies mode is bad, because if they'd have literally just said, hey, you remember that World at War Zombies game you played for hours and got to round 600 on Shinonuma? Here it is again. They've butchered the zombies mode. It is kind of a shame. If it literally played like zombies, kind of like how the multiplayer is just multiplayer.
Fair enough.
If they'd have done that with the zombies, I would be all over that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not.
That's kind of the one caveat for my recommendation. Is that I'm not a zombies guy, but I think I
definitely am. And as zombies, a zombies guy, it's bad.
Fair enough.
Jules, your last one was Ape Out, which is like this jazz infused playing as an ape Hotline Miami top down lovely thing.
This is the thing, I absolutely adore Hotline Miami. It's just such a good game, and the sequel was like even better in terms of how like buttery smooth it was. Mm-hmm. So when I was told that this was basically like a game where you get to play as an ape destroying everything and decimating guards with barrels, I was like, okay, let's give this a go. And when I first saw it, immediately the visuals, I was like, they're striking, yep. but they're not beautiful. It's not the Hotline Miami thing in terms of this weirdly vibrant over the top thing that was kind of like psychedelic in your face. But when I started playing it and saw it in motion, I was like, oh, I get it now. It's because of the fact that it's like boiling everything down to its core concept of get from A to B in the most violent way possible. And I honestly loved it. I played it absolutely tons on the flight from Newcastle to LA to New York when we did the WrestleMania trip. I was just like constantly on it because I'm scared of flying, so for me to do that, I had to have something to play to get my mind off it, and going through that I was like, oh my god, this is actually distracting me so well.
The thing that I adore about it is that the music is all jazz based, but it's composed based on what you're doing, so like as you move the ape through, you get like the sort of like dung 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 in the background, and then when you smash someone off a wall you get the big cymbal crash, like, and it's so good. Like it sort of remixes on the fly and like it goes alongside everything that you're doing, like you said, with this kind of like almost like psychedelic like visuals, like all these really stark colors and oranges and purples and everything. Man, that game is like perfectly paced.
I feel as well the only criticism I can level at it is in some areas it was a bit unclear as to how you were meant to progress in a few of them, but maybe it was just too short as well. There was I want more stuff.
I think it works as just this like injection of like sheer kind of like jazz adrenaline for like 3 hours.
But for getting me through that long flight, definitely a surprise hit for me.
Rich, your last one was Death Stranding, which we're running out of time, but we should talk about anyway.
Very quickly, it's not so much that it is a surprising game. It's more for me, and I think for a lot of people as well, were surprised it was as good as it was. Because as somebody who hasn't been a Kojima fan ever and not played anything of Kojima's work ever, I was going in completely blind. And as you guys know, I was flip-flopping so much this year as to whether I cared, whether I don't, after the whole pissing thing at Gamescom. I was like, I hate this. I literally hate
this. Funny enough, the mushrooms didn't get you in.
Why are people praising this?
But then 2 days later, you were like seeing him with the otter hat on doing the
like, it wasn't the otter hat thing. It was when they did the first briefing trailer, when the whole scene with Die Hardman in the White House. Like when that kicked in, I was like, cool, I'm back on board now. And then when it came around to like thinking, do I pre-order it, do I get it, and I did, and I'm really I'm still not finished it, but I'm so happy I got it, and it has surprised me this year that because I think it was my number 3 game of the year in my own personal list. And I just loved it. I was just genuinely surprised that I enjoyed it as much as I did. And I'm really, really happy that I now have a Kojima title under my belt.
Yes.
As it were. Like, because the thing, obviously, one of the things that switches people off about Metal Gear is just how vast and how silly things can get. Death Stranding felt so, like, boiled down. And even when, like, when you're watching the trailers and stuff, things don't make sense. When you get into the world, everything just... it just works.
Oh man,
it just works. And that was the thing. Like, it was literally when I think it was like the second main mission we have to deliver the body to the crematorium. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just that point when I thought, "Yep, this just works. Everything makes sense." And I have loved my time with it. I am annoyingly at the bit which you knew. Literally, I'd said to you like, "I've reached this bit in Death Stranding," and you went, "It's this bit."
It's the mountains.
Like, oh god. So yeah, there's a point I've reached the I'm guessing this is like the only proper lull in the game.
It's the bit where I was like, "Oh come on."
I think this is where I need to force myself back into it, kind of like how I was with like The Last of Us when I reached a bit of a point and I was like, "Oh, I can't be doing this anymore."
You can kind
of
like
I need to force myself through it to get past that point, but that's where I am now. And I will finish it, but just it's been an absolute joy to play.
I think considering the amount of mechanics that they took, that on the face of it would sound ridiculous, like the abundance of walking and the like over encumbrance and like the idea that most of it is fetch quest based and whatever, the way that they roll out like just constantly so many surprising mechanics that for me was just an absolute joy to see unfold. The fact that, you know, you get bikes and zip lines and all these different ways to traverse, like it only constantly surprises you, and because the world is so ridiculous anyway, you just don't know where it's going, and like just watching Death Stranding unfold was like one of my most fun game playing experiences of the whole year. My number one thing is Trover Saves the Universe, which is Justin Roiland's game, which like I get that Rick and Morty is like a divisive thing,
but still this is a massive surprise to hear you talking about
ran into a McDonald's and demanded Szechuan sauce. I don't care. Rick and Morty is a solid show. It's extremely funny. I'd absolutely love that show, and just watching him go nuts with a full original developer team, Squanch Games, he just like made it from the ground up. You play as Trover, who has the same voices as Morty, and it's a third person platformer, You can play it in VR, you can play it normally. But it's just the fact that you can, his writing is all over it. It's clearly he just stood in a booth and improvised an entire thing and then they coded around it. And the fact when you first come up against an entire race that all speak like Rick and they're all just talking to each other and arguing with each other. And when you kill one of them, he's like, you killed my brother. Like, what the hell, man? And you can just, you can improvise so much in those little mini moments. And it just, it feels like you're playing the game version of one of the channel hopping episodes from the show where they're just like thinking of just nothing held back.
Yeah.
And it, I just think it's hilarious. I think that that show gets overlooked so much because some of the fandom is toxic as hell.
Is it VR as well?
Can be. You can play VR.
That's cool.
Because you play as a new race that lives bolted into their chairs.
Yeah.
And you're just like floating around so you can be that person. And just even the tutorial is hilarious. But I love the agency that you're given in that game. And you kind of feel like a bystander to all these weird little comedic skits. But you do have agency in them because you can run around and whatever. And just like accidentally killing someone's best friend or whatever. Yeah. Or this guy tutorializing and saying like, hey, if you go, you know, clean out the rats in the basement and you go to do that. And he's like, not those rats. Those are my, like, I've been keeping them for 10 years. Like, what have you done? And like, stuff like that. It's just great.
The weird thing is with comedy games like this is that it's so hard to get them right so that they don't lose steam like a couple of hours in. Because if you were to tell me it's just Justin improvising for 5 to 10 hours, I'd be like, ooh, that's that's good, but there's only so much performative nerd totally weirdness I can take.
Yeah, I will totally say the most surprising element is how snappy it feels. Like, it's genuinely a very well-playing game. Like, the little spurts of melee you do are, like, snappy and responsive. The fact that you get, like, jet boots and different upgrades and stuff. Yeah, there's enough, to, on a pure gameplay side, to make it a fun third-person platformer. And you layer on all this, like, really wacky, avant-garde, quirky as hell, stupid, like, puerile humor that Justin Roiland is known for. If that's your jam, then you'll love it. I think it's an absolute blast.
But if you take it all apart, like, it shouldn't work.
No.
But I'm glad that it's worked so well for you for that.
I mean, the opening premise is that Trover's dogs get stolen and put into another alien's eyes, and then you have to go back and he's just like, the dogs get stolen my dogs and put them in the eyes. I don't know. I'm going to find out.
I think
so
that
a lot
was
of that.
The thing for me that, like, switched me off from it when I saw the first trailer, because the first trailer was like him sat in the bath.
Yes.
Because it's same voice. I just thought, I love Rick and Morty, but it's just like this. Now you said, like, it is genuinely really good, and it isn't. It doesn't feel like it's just him trying to do more of the same random rubbish that might actually not land. Uh-huh. That was the thing that made me not look twice at Trover.
His whole shtick is just like is elongating a joke for like way too long. But I think they do it well enough. And for me, enough of the jokes that do run on have been tied to set pieces or little sort of set piece moments that I think work really well. Even just talking to the vendor guy that's trying to sell you upgrades and stuff. I think all of that stuff's done really well. So yeah, don't overlook that game if the Rick and Morty fandom has put you off a million other things.
Fair enough.
I think that it's worthwhile. But yeah, so let us know what your favorites are down in the comments below. Come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. And yes, I thought I would do a new outro, which I've scripted.
Ooh, okay.
I'd try and remember it, and I forgot. So
voice
I'm say,
over Scott coming.
I know. I'm going to say thank you all very much for listening. Please give us a like on YouTube, leave a review, tell your friends, or just think happy thoughts. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming podcast. I've been Scott Taylor, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for having me. That was a lovely outro.
I know, and Jules Gill.
Thank you very much.
I'll catch you guys next time. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.